Welcome to Cool Science Radio. I'm Scott Greenberg.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake. You ask your AI assistant a question, say, and it answers fluently, confidently, almost wisely. But it doesn't actually know what it's saying. Today's most powerful AI systems can write poetry, pass medical exams, and hold a conversation. But what they can't do, at least not yet, is actually mean any of it. There's a barrier between processing language and understanding it. And most of us don't even know it's there.
Today on Cool Science Radio, we talk with Dr. Melanie Mitchell, complexity researcher, cognitive scientist, and author of the book Artificial Intelligence, A Guide for Thinking Human. Dr. Mitchell is someone who is asking the hard questions about what artificial intelligence can and cannot do. Dr. Mitchell will help us understand why machines that seem so capable still lack the common sense of a five-year-old and something we take for granted, and why choosing the gap isn't just a technical puzzle. Dr. Mitchell, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks for having me here.
So this is very interesting. I mean, I use ChatGPT and Claude and all those things all the time. As a matter of fact, I'm going to confess, it even helped me a little bit with this interview and some maybe even questions to ask you. But now I'm curious, does it actually know what I'm asking it to ask you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that we have to think about in new ways what we mean by terms like, does it know? What is knowledge? In some sense, it knows. In some sense, some human-like sense, it doesn't. Because, you know, when it talks about what it should ask me, does it know what it really means to ask a question in the human sense where, you know, I'm talking to you and I ask a question and I get a response and I have some idea about what why you might be asking the question, what you might be thinking about. And I think these models, well, they get some aspects of knowledge. They lack some of the human nature of knowledge that we humans share.
So when did you first suspect that AI systems, despite their impressive performance, were missing something fundamental about the meaning of what they were actually telling us?
Well, I've spent my career thinking about what meaning is and what intelligence is. You know, there's so many different ways that people think about these very broad ideas. For me, I like to put a kind of a caveat on the word meaning and say human-like meaning, because I think maybe there could be other kinds of meaning for, say, different animals or even for AI systems. But human-like meaning comes from our embedding in our own embodied physical world, in our embedding in a social network of other humans. And AI systems don't have either of those things. So I think if they have meaning at all, it's a different kind of meaning based only on being trained on human language.
Melanie, since you've spent your whole life in an inquiry, really, of AI and what it means and what it doesn't mean and how the world perceives it and how it perceives us, you probably suspected that we would be at this point. And yet AI has had these kind of roller coaster history where people believe in it and then they don't. And then they believe in it and it advances and then they don't. And so where are we right now? Do you think we're at a crossroads? I mean, it now, unlike any other time, it's used by everyone.
People have different goals with respect to AI. The original goal of sort of the original pioneers of AI was to build machines that have the same intelligence that humans have, or at least of the same kind. And other people have the goal of building useful tools or useful products. And those are very different goals, as we've seen throughout the history of AI. For instance, think back to sort of the 2010s, before all this ChatGPT and generative AI stuff. That was when you started to be able to dictate text, say, to your phone, and it could transcribe it really well, surprisingly well. That was based on methods that used huge amounts of data from speech, human speech, and to transforming it into text. It seemed like it was understanding what you were saying, but it showed certain kinds of errors that made people in the field realize that it really was a kind of shallow understanding. It wasn't a human-like understanding. But I was amazed that it could get as far as it could without understanding in a human-like way the underlying text. Same with machine translation programs. You know, we've all used Google Translate, for example, to do some kind of translation, and it's gotten better and better and better. But does it actually understand the text that it's translating? Often it can make errors that show that it's not doing it in a human-like way.
It's funny. There is a town just outside of Park City called Peoa, spelled P-E-O-A. And this is reminding me of kind of what you're talking about. I will do a voice to text, and I'm working on a project out there. So both my husband and I say Peoa into the voice text every day, multiple times, and it has not figured out how to spell Peoa. It comes up with all kinds of crazy things. So I had to look up, how can I trick it into knowing when I say Peoa to spell it? And then the resolution was to create a fake contact where you spell it correctly into it. The reason I mention that is it's along the lines of what you're saying. But on the other hand, artificial intelligence is learning so quickly that this conversation that we're having today about Peoa, you know, next week could have resolved itself. And you're seeing that as well. And so the questions you have today, or the questions you had 3 months ago, are they the same questions that you have today?
Some of them, yes, some of them, no. So I wrote a book about AI, as you mentioned. It came out in 2019. Which is, you know, the dark ages with respect to current AI. And I gave a lot of examples of AI doing really well, but failing occasionally in a way that showed sort of the cracks in the facade of understanding. I think that all of those examples no longer apply, because the progress in AI has been enormous over the last 7 years since my book was published, but there are still cracks. It's interesting, there is a term that people in AI have coined to describe what we have today, which is jagged intelligence. And I love this term because it conveys that AI systems, if you look at how well they do, it has kind of a jagged profile. You know, in some cases they do extremely well. So you're going like high up, you know, performance space, but then they will make errors unexpectedly that you would never have guessed they could make, given that they could do, you know, they could prove some complex math theorem, but then they make some incredibly simple math mistake. And you see this in every domain that they work in, that they can do incredibly well, but they also can make very unexpected, very unhuman-like errors. So this notion of jagged intelligence makes them somewhat untrustworthy. You know, you can't trust them to always do what you think that they should be able to do. And this creates a problem for actually using them in the real world, unless you, the human, are checking on what they do.
Lynn, I have a hard time with Peoa, so maybe I have jagged intelligence. So,
yeah, we all have jagged intelligence of a certain kind. You know, humans aren't perfect at everything. They make lots of mistakes. But the AI's jagged intelligence is somewhat different than our jagged intelligence, which makes our expectations of what the system should be able to do maybe fail in some cases.
Well, your book, even though it was written in 2019, has come roaring back in popularity today, given the advances in AI and the popularity of AI. And I think what you were referring to is the large language models. I've learned a little bit from my son, who's an AI engineer from Portland State University, where you're currently located. And I know some of these can fail spectacularly. And you've talked about some of the examples of their failures. What is an example you'd like to share with us about a spectacular failure in AI?
Well, let me first just give a minor correction, which is I'm no longer at Portland State. I'm now in Santa Fe, New Mexico. but see, Portland State was great.
This is what I'm talking about, AI right there.
So one riff on that, you know, one failure of AI is that it's not always able to figure out when it is answering a question and be current. So like if you asked one of the AI systems, like, is the U.S. waging war in Iran right now? It, at least early on in the Iran war, it might answer, absolutely not. There's no war in Iran right now. You have misinformation about that. So it has a problem with keeping up with current events. Another kind of failure is often called a hallucination. So you might be, say, writing a report on something, having it help you write a report and saying, please generate some citations that would be relevant for this report. And it will generate many great citations that are relevant, but it might generate one or two or more that would be relevant, but they don't exist. And this has gotten, for instance, lots of lawyers into trouble when they use ChatGPT to write their briefs, and it hallucinates court cases that are cited in the brief that didn't actually happen. And this is, you know, when this gets found out, the lawyers get in huge amounts of trouble with judges. You know, how are they supposed to know? It's hard to check every single citation that these systems give you. And they might also, there was a fun example, fun for me at least, about a year ago where the Chicago Sun-Times, a journalist there was supposed to write a piece on, you know, great summer books to read. They used a large language model and it generated 10 great summer books to read with lots of descriptions of them. About five of them didn't exist, but they were plausible. They were plausible that that author who they claimed wrote a non-existent book, they were plausible that that author might have written such a book. So you got to check what they output.
I think I read those books. By the way.
Some of them I wished existed. I would have loved to have read them.
So you have compared AI to a five-year-old in the past and saying things, you know, like, hey, AI does get a lot of things right. It may not actually understand it, but there are certain things that AI does that are actually intuitive to a five-year-old. Help me draw that comparison.
Yeah, so this is sort of goes along the idea of the jagged intelligence. We have these systems that can write code that's as good as the best software engineers could write, or prove very difficult math theorems and solve problems in math. And yet they have a lack of common sense in some cases. They have a lack of ability to reason about, say, things about just ordinary things about the world that may have to do with like how to get from one place to another without, you know, driving off a cliff or other kinds of issues that a five-year-old might have no problem with, especially in the domain of visual intelligence. You know, we have these language models which can produce incredibly sophisticated sounding language. But if you give them pictures and ask them to reason about the pictures, they can often make really crazy mistakes.
So I'm curious, Melanie, whether or not it's our job to fix the hallucinations by refining our prompts to AI. So that journalist in Chicago, had that person said, give me a list of 10 great summer reads that actually exist and can be proven by finding them on, you know, Amazon or something. Would that have fixed the problem? And is that a Band-Aid? I mean, how are AI engineers actually fixing these hallucinations?
Yes, you can actually improve the output with prompts. That's called prompt engineering, which is a skill we're all still learning. There's another method that these models now use called retrieval augmented generation, or RAG. And what that means is that instead of just generating language, they actually go out on the internet and look for a citation like that actually exists. See, so if you ask it like, what's going on right now in India? it'll give you a summary, and then it will come back with some links that are to like news articles that support that summary. The problem is that neither of those techniques are perfect. They help, but even with prompt engineering, the systems can still generate hallucinations. And even with this, like actually going out and retrieving a link to the thing you're asking about, sometimes the link can actually lead to an article that doesn't say the thing that the summary claims it said. So I would say these models are getting better, but I don't think the way that they're structured right now, I don't think it can ever eliminate hallucinations perfectly.
Really?
Yeah, because they're designed to generate something plausible in their language, and they're not designed to have a direct connection of whether what they generate is true or false. Part of that is they're not like embedded in the real world, and they don't have a trustworthy sense of what's actually true or what's actually false.
They've not developed intuition. And, you know, we might say that about a three-year-old, right, has not developed a sense of intuition, so might believe something that's not actually true.
Well, one thing that they don't have that I think a five-year-old has is what's called metacognition, which means an evaluation of your own thinking. So if I ask you, what's the tallest building in Paris? You have a sense of whether you know that or not. You know, you might say, I don't know, I have to Google that. And if you Google it, you're probably likely to give, you know, find the right answer and tell me the right answer, because I can trust that you know how to read what's on Google. But these models don't have a sense of that. They don't have a sense of confidence in their own answer. Even when they go out and, you know, quote unquote, Google it, which is basically what they do, and bring you back a summary, they might have misinterpreted what they found. And I can give you an example of that if you want.
Great. Yes.
Yeah. So early on in, do you remember when Google came out with its AI overviews, where you Google something and then it gives you, instead of like just giving you the links, it gives you a little paragraph or two about the thing you asked? So I was trying to test it to see how well it did. And I asked it, you know, who was the first U.S. Muslim president? And it replied, you know, the first U.S. Muslim president was Barack Obama. And it had a footnote, you know, like a citation. And the citation was to a book chapter that was entitled Barack Obama, : the first U.S. Muslim president, ? And the book chapter was about how people had come to this false belief that Obama was Muslim. The AI had totally ignored all that and just based its answer on the chapter title, ignoring the question mark. And there's so much kind of possibility of misinterpretation and also just bad information on the internet that these models don't really have a good sense of what they're right about and what they're wrong about, unlike a human. And maybe a five-year-old hasn't totally developed that either. You know, I think children also have trouble with that kind of metacognition, but certainly adults are able to do that with pretty well.
Well, I think I'm personally guilty of buying into the authenticity, for lack of a better word, of artificial intelligence and the answers it's giving me. And maybe it's because I want to believe the answers it's giving me, or maybe I'm just looking for a shortcut myself. And I think I myself am falling prey to anthropomorphizing these answers, these systems. And I think it can be very dangerous. I mean, I'm just looking to do some research every now and then, but how do we guard against it? How do we kind of put our own personal antennas up and say, wait a minute, but how do I guard against buying into everything I'm being fed by artificial intelligence?
Yeah, good question. I mean, you know, when you bring up ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini, there's always a disclaimer saying, you know, this system can make errors. You know, don't trust everything it says. But on the other hand, they're designed to make us anthropomorphize them because they use, say, first person pronouns. They say, I think, I believe. I, you know, do this. And so you think of them as being an individual, kind of like a human, that's designed. We humans are very prone to anthropomorphize anything that talks to us in natural language. That's been shown again and again. So I think you have to be quite aware of your own kind of cognitive bias towards anthropomorphism. And you have to remember that these systems, as in their disclaimers, are not perfect. And the problem is there's this technological paradox, which is as a system gets better and better, it in some ways becomes more dangerous because we trust it more. So if it's given you the right answer 99 times out of 100, you're going to trust it and you're not going to check. But that one time out of 100 could be not too much of a problem where it gets it wrong, or it could be catastrophic. I think that's a problem with a lot of technologies when we learn to trust them and stop using our own common sense to check them.
So maybe if I had taken my research that said that you were still at Portland State University from ChatGPT and run it through Claude, maybe Claude could have corrected ChatGPT.
Yeah, that's a good question.
That would have been it's kind of an interesting exercise. I have to think about that.
Yeah.
There is, by the way, a wide range of belief in the AI community that there is that we're fundamentally on the wrong track. And then there are other colleagues that believe that we are much, much closer to a human level intelligence with artificial intelligence. Where do you place yourself on that spectrum?
You know, it's hard to define human level intelligence, and people in AI have been trying to figure out what it means for the whole history of the field. So back in the 1980s, a lot of people thought that if we get a machine that can beat a grandmaster at chess, that will require general human level intelligence, because chess is like one of the hardest tasks that humans apply themselves to. Well, we did get a grandmaster level chess player in the 1990s, but it wasn't generally intelligent. It couldn't do anything besides play chess. And it didn't really lead to anything like human level intelligence. I think that we often underestimate how complex our own intelligence is. So we say, oh, now machines can, win the International Math Olympiad, which is a really hard math competition. Therefore, they must be close to human level intelligence. I think that's somewhat of the same fallacy that the chess example had. And there's a interesting paradox in AI called Moravec's paradox that says that the things that are hard for humans, the things that we find the hardest, like doing math and playing chess and all kinds of things, are easier for machines than the things that we find the simplest, like walking across a crowded sidewalk without bumping into anyone. There's still no robot that can do that reliably. I think that still holds in many ways. So I think people who say we're very close to artificial general intelligence are being fooled by some of those the incredible performance of AI systems on a lot of these really hard tasks, to think that will mean that we're going to be having human-like robots anytime now. But also nobody really knows what's going to happen as we scale up systems more and more. The big success of AI is due to the amount of training data that can be used to train it. And if we get more and more bigger networks that have more and more training data, what's going to happen? Are we going to be at a plateau, or are we going to keep, zooming up exponentially? And I don't think anyone really knows, but my own intuition is that, yes, we are on the wrong track if we want to really reach something like human-like intelligence. But then there's the question, should we do that? Is that going to be beneficial for humans, or is it going to be disastrous?
So many questions that will be left unanswered. We didn't even get into bias, which is a topic I wanted to talk to you about. We'll have to circle back in 6 months or so and talk to you again. Our guest is Dr. Melanie Mitchell. She is the author of the book Artificial Intelligence, A Guide for Thinking Humans, published in 2019, which what was the word you used? You said it was...
The dark ages, right.
But always updating. Before we let you go, Melanie, what are you doing at the Santa Fe Institute?
So I'm actually writing a new book that is really going to be for at least a month or two more up to date. Okay. It's hard to really freeze frame what's going on in a book or even an article, but I'm trying to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. Do you have a published date?
No, not yet, but I'm working on it as hard as I can.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio. It's been really interesting.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.